All right, we're going to get started, and I have no doubt that within 30 seconds, we're going to have a deluge at the door, and we'll be at quorum. I do apologize for testifiers and the public for not having full committee here at this point, but here they come. I suspect that a number of committee members are at other committee hearings at this time. We're not at quorum, so I'm not going to take any official action yet, but we'll certainly get ourselves started. Today's discussion, and this is really an informational hearing, is on the Common Core State Standards Initiative. There are major things in the work, or major things happening in the country in regards to this issue, and I thought it was really important for this committee in the House to get on top of this issue as quickly as possible. We've referenced this issue over the course of the last several months, but of course the timing at the national level is not quite matching up with our cycle here in Minnesota legislature. Nonetheless, there are potentially big implications for Minnesota relative to the outcomes of the Common Core State Standards Initiative and Minnesota's participation and adoption in them. And so it's really important, members, that we understand what this creature is and what its purpose is, who's involved in it, how is it unfolding. I have a series of questions. I suspect we will not get to all of them today. And I suspect we don't even have the answers to all of them yet. Questions like, what's the connection to Race to the Top Phase 2 and beyond in terms of the reauthorization of the Elementary Secondary Education Act? What's the connection of state standards relative to those things? What is indeed the process this year? What kind of timelines are we looking at? There are a number of questions that I have in regards to the executive branch's authority relative to the adoption of these common standards for adoption. And obviously questions, I think as legislators we all ought to have questions about where legislative authority steps in here. In terms of ratifying any decisions the executive branch makes or negating any decisions that the executive branch may make. What are future implications for Minnesota being involved, having adopted the standards? What happens if at any point in the future we decide to change either standards or the assessments connected to them? Members, you recall last year we did a hold off on the grad math assessments. What are the implications for buying into and adopting the Common Core standards if this legislature felt compelled to do something like that? Again, there is a lot of work unfolding in the area of assessing our standards. There are a lot of questions in my mind about whether we would be inhibited or the opposite, have more leeway in regards to adopting different, perhaps fuller, broader assessment tools relative to these standards. So the questions go on and on and on. And I'm looking forward to today's discussion as the first of no doubt many discussions in this committee and this legislature relative to this important issue. And so with that, I'm going to ask Beth Ani, who's Director of Academic Standards for the Minnesota Department of Education, to get us going. And we have a number of her colleagues as well. And Ms. Ani, I'll allow you to sort of just direct when you would want those individuals to come forward. We also have asked Grace Kelleher from Minnesota School Boards Association to comment. We know that the National School Boards Association is involved in these efforts, And so we'd love to hear what you're hearing from your colleagues in the national venue, but also what school board members in Minnesota are thinking about relative to implications of adopting the Common Core standards for our school districts. So with that, I'm going to turn our hearing over to Ms. Audie. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Beth Aune, Director of Academic Standards for the Minnesota Department of Education, and we want to thank you for inviting us to share some information and some opinion about the Common Core State Standards Initiative. With me today are a number of folks who have worked at a very deep level with the Common Core standards and our own state standards. To my right is Sharon Tierney, English Language Arts Specialist for the Department of Education. Carrie Ross has joined us, who is the Reading Specialist for the department. Also Sue Weigand, who is our Mathematics Specialist at the department. And the two co-chairs from our Mathematics Standards Committee for 2007, Larry Gray and Ellen Delaney, and they will be testifying.
Wonderful. Good morning, all. You can certainly pull up more chairs if you desire to the witness table. And then members, I would encourage you to weigh in at any time. Don't assume that we'll just go through presentations and hold off. If there are any questions at any time, please ask them at that point. And so that's just sort of a tip to you, Ms. Aune, that you might be interrupted. But that means that we're having a good discussion here. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to present some points to provide background about the Common Core State Standards Initiative, and then we'll talk specifically about the English Language Arts Standards, and I'll turn it over to Sharon Tierney and Carrie Ross for that, and then we'll follow that with mathematics. So to begin with, the CCSSI, the Common Core State Standards Initiative, is a state-led effort to establish a single set of clear standards for English language arts and math that states can share and voluntarily adopt. The purpose behind the Common Core Initiative is to ensure that students receive a consistently high education from school to school and state to state. It's going to provide opportunities for states to share best practices and resources within the state as well as across states to better meet student needs. The express goal of the Common Core State Standards is that all students graduate from high school ready to go into college or the workforce. And in order to have such high, rigorous standards created, they are trying to use the best available evidence and benchmark the knowledge and skills to the highest state standards across the country and the world. In fact, they want to be able to guarantee that our students will be competitive in the global marketplace.
Can I interrupt you just very quickly? And members, I went to the Council of Chief State Schools Officers website last night. They have a very full website that walks through the Common Core State Standards Initiative, and I would encourage you to do that. They also have on the website the current draft of the standards in question. Let me just very quickly ask you this, Ms. Aune. So I'm hearing the purpose here in terms of high rigor connected to college and career readiness, and then benchmarked in an international benchmarking process. And I know I'm jumping ahead here, but I really want to turn this into a conversation, and certainly want to encourage you to continue with your presentation, but also want to have a conversation here. Are we assuming that Minnesota's current standards don't meet that level of rigor? So anyway, I guess that's the first question right off the shoot.
Mr. Chair, the answer to your question is no, we are not making that assumption. Particularly in terms of mathematics, the revised mathematics standards of 2007, we believe that Minnesota's academic standards in that subject are benchmarked to meet the demands of college and career readiness. In fact, we were bound by legislation that was passed earlier to make sure that every time we revise the standards, we embed college and work readiness skills within them. And we feel we effectively did that with the 2007 standards. So our concern has been, will the Common Core standards at least match the rigor or overall quality that we think is inherent in the Minnesota standards?
So in my mind, this begs the question, if, and of course you only referenced the math standards at this point, but obviously it sounds like there's a culture in the state of Minnesota that's pushing toward, you know, that level of rigor. And the assumption I would make is that all our subject areas then would eventually be at that. So why are we involved? If Minnesota's pushing already in this area, why get involved in a in this, you know, broad national collective with all its sort of, you know, unknowns that are out there?
Mr. Chair, there are several reasons. One is, given the state's reputation for its standards and the leadership of this particular initiative, National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, our commissioner and our governor have leading roles in those organizations. So we knew we had a possibility to have great influence in the development of those standards. So rather than, you know, having to accept whatever standards are created by other people, we knew we could have some influence in shaping those standards to be the kinds of knowledge and skills that we think are really important for all students. So we went into it with that attitude. Another advantage to signing on to the initiative was that we knew the Race to the Top application that our state would prepare would require us to have signed on to the Common Core State Standards Initiative with the intention to adopt the standards in English language arts and mathematics in order to receive full points for our application.
And Ms. Sonny, and this is not a criticism certainly of you or the department, but another way of, for me as a politician, of hearing that is that we're pretty good in this state in terms of pushing levels of rigor. Obviously, we would like to be leaders. I think that's a noble and important thing for us to play nationwide. But in essence, the federal government is sort of coercing, you know, states like us to buy into something that may have questionable value. Obviously, it's a short hearing. There may be other advantages. I suspect, you know, there may be additional resources available. You mentioned earlier the sharing of best practices. We still do continue to have, you know, large achievement gaps relative to racial ethnic groups, and perhaps there are other parts of the nation that have been able to apply state standards in a way that contributes to narrowing those gaps. So I can come up with all sorts of arguments on why we would participate, but it's not lost on me that there is, you know, sort of this element of, you know, either coercion or motivation that exists relative to this. And I also suspect that whatever elements are here may play themselves out in the reauthorization of NCLB as well.
Mr. Chair, that's our understanding as well. Recent conference call that the department had with the U.S. Department of Education indicated that states would be required to adopt the Common Core by August 2nd of this year in order to receive full points on their application.
That's right. We have a couple of questions from Representative Brainerd and Slawick. Yes, Representative Brainerd first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the chair has made a lot of points that, you know, I was interested in, and I'm sure you'll be aiming to address some of these, but I think that we, many of us as legislators, have a concern that we have a cart before the horse sort of situation here. We're just beginning to look at the issues around the Common Core standards versus our state standards and whether we're compromising our own standards of quality and moving toward the Common Core, and then we're in a position of having to adopt in order to address a protocol that may be problematic in other ways in relation to Race to the Top. But I'm very concerned about whether we can actually continue to be research-based and data-driven in our approach to standards when we have the types of political factors that are pushing in on us and the time constraints. And I'm wondering how you balance those in terms of looking at your own professional approach to the standards, the issues raised by the Common Core standards proposal.
So research base, as you know, as a base for being able to make decisions first and foremost. So Ms. Hawdy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a concern of ours as well. And the approach we have taken is rather than to get immersed in who is developing what and you know, particular philosophical underpinnings that they might have regarding certain kinds of standards development schemes. Our approach has been, let's study what is on paper. Let's review thoroughly each draft document as it comes out, and then let's do an internal review at the department using the expertise we have there, and then let's extend that to educators at the K-12 and post-secondary levels and get their take on it as well. And we think that by kind of triangulating the data in that way, we get a very objective sense of the strengths and weaknesses of each draft of the standards. And that is a reason why we have been very concerned from the beginning with this process, because we take great pains each time a draft is published to thoroughly review it and critique it.
We are at quorum, and so I'm going to call us officially to order. And Representative Slawick, if you can move the minutes of March 18th, I would greatly appreciate it.
Okay, Mr. Chair, so moved.
We have adoption of the minutes of March 18th. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I probably take a little bit of a different approach. Sometimes I don't say a lot in this committee because I'm not a K-12 educator and I'm not as immersed in the policy or the policy decisions. So just from a layperson's sort of viewpoint, I think this is really interesting and a good idea. And I think it's something we should really take an interest in. I think Minnesota's been, I don't grow up here. Minnesota's terribly provincial about the testing and the standards and everything. And I think we need to really, you know, and I have kids that are in the schools that are having trouble with all of this stuff. So there's a long story, short story. So what I look at is, yes, I think it would be very interesting to have the country on everybody on common standards. I think it would be very helpful. I think for my own kids and for kids their age, I mean, put some on competitively, you know, you rank instead of even here, you would rank nationally. But my questions would be cost, you know, if you see a big cost in adopting them. And then my other one would be the relation to testing. You know, in this committee, we've done an awful lot on testing. And I just, you know, the MDE has expanded their testing department by, 100 people or something in the last 5 years. Would it not alone change the national standards, but it also change the testing? And I would think those would have to correlate. Is that true?
Ms. Hawdy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's unknown at this point what the cost implications would be because the draft standards are just that, they're in draft form. So until we get the final published version, it'll be difficult to really estimate what kinds of changes will be needed by school districts in terms of curriculum, professional development, and classroom assessment as well. So that's unknown at this point. Right now, we can see, at least with the English language arts standards, that there probably wouldn't be significant costs incurred to implement the ELA standards, the English language arts, as they stand today. In math, I think that's a tougher decision. Districts already have been working hard to realign curricula to meet the specifications of the 2007 math standards. And the degree to which the Common Core math standards align or don't align with our standards is really going to make a big difference.
Representative Faust.
In terms of testing. Of course, there are testing implications as well. Minnesota has joined, you know, testing consortia to pool resources together to think about what the testing might look like. given the final drafts when they come out of the standards. So that's a big issue that's out there. Certainly economies of scale are one of the big benefits of having a Common Core State Standards Initiative.
Representative Slaughter.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say that's what I see as an advantage, too. I mean, there is something about having everything individualized, but there is something about economies of scale in this type of economy, you know, where we're having so much trouble affording things. I would think it might slim down MDE a little bit, which not say we value all of you, but I would think it might be a little more efficient, as potentially more effective, and allow kids to compete again on a national basis to get into colleges or into workforce and chosen careers. So.
Having more efficient state government is a good thing. Representative Faust.
I'll pass for now.
Okay. Ms. Sani, and is it Dr. Ani?
Yes.
I thought so. Yeah, Dr. Ani. Please continue.
Well, by way of more background about the Common Core, the leaders of the Common Core State Standards Initiative are two principal organizations, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, which is the organization of the state superintendents or commissioners of education. They're supported to a large degree by three other organizations, ACHIEVE, ACT, and the College Board. So these three organizations in particular have really helped frame the development of the Common Core state standards. It is anticipated that the standards will be the basis for a system of high-quality assessments. So they are thinking that this could be the launching of some real cutting-edge kinds of statewide assessment once the standards are published and development starts to occur with the testing. We've talked about race to the top, that adoption of the Common Core is still a requirement in this new, the second round of application. And in the new ESEA reauthorization, college and career readiness standards will be expected of states as well. In fact, right now the wording is states may choose to upgrade their existing standards or work together with other states to develop and adopt common state-developed standards. So that's the latest information that we have from the Blueprint for Reform for the reauthorization of ESEA. I'd like to spend a little bit of time now talking about the process of how these standards are being developed. In terms of structure, the CCSSI has three components in place. First, they have a development team. The development team is the writing team for the English Language Arts standards, and then there's a separate development team for the math standards. And that's the team that we're most familiar with at this point. And these writers are exchanging, from what we can tell, lots of email, and once in a while they get together in person to make changes to the draft standards. But they have been really working on these documents from the beginning. A second part of the structure is a feedback team. Again, a separate feedback team for English Language Arts, a separate team for mathematics. And the purpose of the feedback team is to provide experts when people on the development team have questions that can be answered by research. And then there's going to be a third kind of team called the Validation Committee. And the Validation Committee is composed of independent educational experts in K-12 and post-secondary education. And their job is to independently review the Common Core standards to make sure that they indeed meet the development criteria, you know, that they are internationally benchmarked, they do reflect college and career readiness, that they're realistic for the classroom, and so on. The process to date has been that the writing team works, a draft gets published, and then feedback is collected, and it's analyzed, and then that feedback goes to inform the next draft of the standards. In terms of where they focus their energies first, they started with college and career readiness, trying to define what does that look like, how does that play out. And their college and career ready standards were first published, the final draft was published in September of 2009. Once those were published, they backmapped the standards. And so what they're working on now is the backmapping of the K-12 standards in both ELA and mathematics.
And Dr. Otter, a backmapping meaning?
Meaning that they took the knowledge and skills that constitute the college and career readiness standards and figured out the progression of knowledge and skills that leads up to students attaining those skills. So that's what's under debate right now. What do those learning progressions look like, and what constitutes the core knowledge and skills that helps all students achieve the college and career ready standards published in September? The deadline has been extended several times. We felt the deadline was very unrealistic in the beginning, and we're not surprised to see it pushed back several times. The current announcement says that the Common Core K-12 standards will be published in late May of 2010. I'd like to share some information about what Minnesota is doing in terms of helping to develop the Common Core state standards. Since the beginning of this process, a little over a year now, Minnesota, through MDE, has been coordinating extensive reviews of the draft standards with our stakeholders. We did this for the College and Career Ready standards published in September, and we're doing it now for the K-12 standards. We send detailed reports about what we see as the strengths and weaknesses of each draft. Detailed reports. We went to great pains to try to clarify terminology, definitions, be explicit by providing examples so that the writing team would clearly understand what our critique meant. That generated some concerns with the national writing teams. In fact, a visit to Minnesota was made by members of the math and ELA writing teams and the president of Achieve, Michael Cohen. They came to Minnesota on October 20th to learn in greater depth what our concerns were and to find out what our standards development process is in this state. And especially they were interested in knowing how we put our math standards together, what the process for that was. So we shared quite a bit of information with them and then went on to provide written critiques in subsequent drafts after that visit. As a result of that October 20th meeting, several Minnesotans were added to the development team. Some of those folks are here today testifying. The governor has publicly indicated, along with the commissioner, that Minnesota will not be adopting the Common Core standards in mathematics and or English language arts unless they're as rigorous as Minnesota's standards. So they really want to be sure that these are high-quality standards before we adopt them. In terms of timeline, we're looking at, as I said, the end of May to see what the published drafts look like. And then a decision has to be made as to whether or not we will adopt one or both sets of standards. If we do adopt the Common Core standards, then we need to look at our 2003 English Language Arts standards and our 2007 math standards and make revisions. The way it's being talked about now is that we would, in fact, adopt Common Core. State would adopt the Common Core standards pretty much as they are and then be able to add up to 15% more of their own standards. They put that 15% on there because they don't want the standards list to be unnecessarily long. So there's an upper limit on that. Minnesota then would take its revised standards after forming a standards committee to figure out, well, what does that 15% look like for Minnesota that we would add onto the Common Core standards? The standards committee would then present its draft revised standards to the commissioner. MDE would collect feedback from educators and other stakeholders. Final changes would be made to the draft, the Minnesota version of the Common Core standards. Final changes would be made based on that feedback. And then eventually those standards would be implemented by the 2013-2014 school year. And it's expected that the standards would need to go through some kind of rulemaking process, as is currently the case.
Dr. Audi, I'm going to interrupt. Representative Newton has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little concerned with a couple things. You're talking about the end of May as the point where we'll be adopting this, but the legislature won't be in session, obviously, or at least we hope not. Does this mean the department is going to be approving the standards, or the governor is going to be approving the standards without legislative input?
Dr. Audi.
Mr. Chair, Representative, those decisions haven't been made. There are so many variables out there right now. Some states have taken an early lead on this by having their legislatures adopt the draft standards. I think it's fair to say we're uncomfortable recommending that as a course of action, given that there's been so much change from one draft of the standards to the next. So, you know, it's unclear at this point how the legislature in each state would be involved in the adoption process.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue, I would be uncomfortable as well, receiving mixed messages from the governor as to whether or not he's going to be supporting Race to the Top. And, you know, we're looking at adopting these standards in order to qualify for Race for the Top, and the last indication I have is that he's not interested in pursuing that at this time. So I'm not quite sure, as Representative Beiner suggested, we might be putting the cart before the horse on this.
Dr. Audi. Well, it's more a comment. We do have a question from Representative Beiner, but I do want to ask quickly, and maybe this might be better for yet another hearing. I want to make sure we hear from our other testifiers as well, but is it the department's position that there is existing authority under, I imagine, under our standard revision cycles for the executive branch to, in fact, unilaterally adopt Common Core without legislative involvement? Do you know, Dr. Audi?
Mr. Chair, I don't think that's the department's position. I think there are so many variables that exist in this whole situation that a number of people are looking in to exactly what would be the best route to go if Minnesota were interested in adopting those standards.
Well, we'll need to figure this out relatively soon. Obviously, I think you said earlier the deadline, at least at this point, is sometime in August. For adoption of the Common
August 2nd.
August 2nd mm-hmm. for Common Core. And Representative Noon, I certainly don't want us to be in session on August the 2nd. But obviously, you know, members, there's some real tension here in terms of some great uncertainty relative to this issue. Representative Beiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Aune, I'm wondering how the process we're engaged in with the Common Core standards relates to our own review and revision process. So are they moving forward in a parallel fashion? Or?
Good question. Dr. Aune.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would like to say wholeheartedly yes, but I can't say that. As you know, the MASS standards were revised in 2007, so we finished that at that time, and now we're looking at revising the MASS standards again. We're very happy with our 2007 MASS standards. Initial indications are that teachers are receiving good professional development, and it's actually changing the way they teach mathematics to their classes, especially at the elementary level. We even have accounts that basic belief systems about the mathematics that children can master are changing in a very positive manner. So we haven't been looking for a change to our 2007 MASS standards. So in that sense, the timeline does not align real well with our mathematics schedule. In terms of English language arts, we are to be revising the English language arts standards in this school year. So in that sense, it's a pretty good match.
Why don't we continue? I do want to get to our other testifiers as well. Dr. Ani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll turn it over now to Sharon Tierney, our language arts specialist, and Carrie Ross, reading specialist, is on hand to answer any questions that might pertain to reading.
Wonderful. Welcome, Ms. Tierney and Ms. Ross.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm going to approach the English language arts standards and provide you with a comparison between the current English language arts standards that were written in 2003 in Minnesota and the new Common Core state standards in English language arts and literacy in science and social studies and history. It's a pretty long title on that set of standards. The two I'll start by talking about the commonalities in the content of the two documents. In both sets of standards, Minnesota's and in the Common Core, students are being taught and will be assessed, we assume, on things that you typically see in a English language arts program or classroom: reading, writing, speaking, and listening. So there aren't any real surprises in the Common Core, and there weren't any surprises in 2003 when we wrote the Minnesota standards, because it's typical of what is taught in most schools in the state. In the Minnesota standards, there are three strands. The first one is reading and literature, and the second one is writing, and the third one is speaking, listening, viewing, and media literacy. And basically, we have kind of a two-level system in the Minnesota standards. We have standards for each grade level, and within those standards, we have something called benchmarks. And benchmarks are further specifications about what a standard looks like in a specific grade. So a third grade benchmark looks different than a fifth grade benchmark in writing. Okay? It's different in the Common Core standards. There are four strands. The first one is reading, which is about informational and literary texts. The second one is writing, which is basically focused on expository and informative and narrative writing. And research is also included in that strand. The third one is speaking and listening, and it deals with kids that are involved in small group discussions and in more formal presentation environments. And the fourth is language, which is another name for vocabulary acquisition and grammar or conventions. So there's a strong comparison in those two sets of standards, nothing that's very different. I will bring up one difference when we talk in a minute about some of the other differences across, other than content. An added feature in the Common Core at grade 6-12 is a set of standards called Literacy in History, Social Studies, and Science. Those are descriptions of what students will know and be able to do in content areas of history, social studies, and science. So it's really about reading and writing in a content area. That's far different than what we have now in the language arts standards. When we look at how the two documents are structured differently or similarly, there's a difference in their appearance. The Minnesota standards are a narrative format. So if I'm a teacher of third grade, I probably go to the page about third grade and read what it is I'm supposed to teach and expect of my students. In the Common Core standards, the standards are presented in charts, so that if I am a third grade teacher or a parent of a third grader, I can look, or a precocious third grader, I could look at those charts and see what was I taught in second grade that will help me get to these standards in third grade, and then what's going to happen in fourth grade that will reinforce or build on what I've learned in third grade. So related to teacher friendliness, I think teachers and parents will find this new format better than what we have in our current standards in Minnesota. Another feature of the Common Core is that there's a consistent use of terminology across the K-12 standards. When we wrote our Minnesota standards in 2003, those were written by grade band committees. So a committee of K-3 people, parents and teachers got together, and a committee of grades 4-5 and grades of 6-8 and a high school committee developed the standards and didn't have a great deal of opportunity to talk to each other about terminology. So the current document presents problems for people in that it talks about functional writing in one grade band, and it talks about work-type writing or everyday writing in another grade band. So a lot of calls that Carrie and I get are about terminology problems. That isn't the case in the Common Core. Because the entire committee worked on the entire document, a lot of those issues are do not present themselves. The Common Core really focuses on what is required of kids as they approach college, because that was the heart of the standard development. That's where the Common Core standard movement began. In Minnesota, we didn't have college and work-ready standards in 2003. We didn't write those in Minnesota until 2006. So the stress or the emphasis is a little bit different in the two documents. Everything in the Common Core is aligned to these common college and career-ready standards. That isn't easily seen in the Minnesota standards.
Ms. Tierney, I'm going to interrupt. Representative Nornes has a question.
Yeah, just a quick question. Actually, a comment, and this doesn't have to do with reading. I was just looking at the clock, and I'm told by some parents that today's young people can't tell time with a clock without digital. So that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Just a comment, I guess, that we've lost that skill. The question I have is, when you're talking about writing, the other old-fashioned skill that I think about is actually being able to write. I'm not talking about keyboarding or computer writing, but just the skill of being able to write, penmanship. Is that anywhere in our standards? Is that something else that's been lost? Because it seems to me that I'm told anyway that the ability to write and spell and so forth has kind of gone the wayside because of the computer and the spell checks and all the other modern aids that we have. So I guess my question is, when you talk about writing, what is that actually saying?
Representative Norris, you'll have to translate. What's a pen? No. Ms. Turner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Handwriting is present in the Minnesota standards. However, since 2003, I think that many students are producing text using technology. And so I think that if we're going to update our standards this year in Minnesota, we would probably look at expanding beyond just handwriting as a way of articulating our ideas on paper. The Common Core standards doesn't specifically reference handwriting. It does talk about tools that are used to present writing, but it doesn't specify what those tools are. So it would be up to an individual school district to decide if they were going to teach handwriting or not.
Okay. Well, Ms. Turner, please continue.
Sure. There are some things that the Common Core standards don't have that we do have in Minnesota standards, and one of those things is media literacy. The Minnesota standards in their speaking and listening strand include the study of media and the impact of media on our thinking. That is not included in the Common Core. So there are no standards that ask kids to evaluate the accuracy and credibility of information found on the internet. There aren't any standards that ask kids to analyze messages and the point of view that different media use to convey their thinking or to convey information, or asking kids to evaluate the logic of reasoning used in both print and non-print text. So that is a missing piece, as is any reference to creative or reflective writing, which is part of the Minnesota standards. The Common Core focuses mainly on three types of writing: argumentative writing, which is stating a claim and proving or supporting it, and persuasive writing, and narrative. So that would be a significant difference.
So, Ms. Tierney, just so I get it right, so the creative reflective writing element is a Minnesota expectation, if you will, in our standards, but not currently reflected in the Common Core drafts. Let me ask, and perhaps this is for Dr. Ami, would that conceivably fall under the 15% if Minnesotans decide, you know, that's really important for Minnesota young people. It's an important skill that we want to continue to nurture. Is that how that would then be introduced and continued through?
Mr. Chair, yes. That we expect that would be included in the 15% that the Standards Committee would want to add.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Tierney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's two more points related to the differences and similarities. One is that in the Common Core standards, the importance of student engagement and motivation is not reflected. And research supports that students need to be engaged and motivated to enhance their learning and to help them see the relevance in what it is they're taught in the classroom. The last concern is the definition of text complexity in the Common Core standards. In most Minnesota schools, we usually refer to Lexile scores when we talk about text complexity. The Common Core offers a equation for determining text complexity that most Minnesota teachers are unfamiliar with, and I think they would find it difficult to use without some professional development. I'd like to close by talking about the impact of how these standards will change or not change what's going on in schools in Minnesota. As Dr. Aune referenced earlier, we don't think that these standards will require that schools add significant resources for when they start their implementation, because they can use, if they have a solid program right now, they can use the resources that they have in-house. If they have a program that's building, they naturally would have been spending money each year to build that program, but it wouldn't be a lot necessary for the Common Core implementation. The other part is that teachers and parents and local school boards and administrators will still be making all the decisions about curriculum in those classrooms. The standards will hopefully be aligned with the curriculum, but it's not like we are dictating, or that the Common Core, I guess, is dictating what teachers have to teach or in what manner it has to be taught. And the last thing is that in these meetings that we've had over the course of this year, we've pulled in 20 to 30 Minnesota educators about 5 times over the course of that time. And they all feel that CCSSO and NGA have been highly responsive to their input, and we've seen significant changes in each draft that they send. So given that, we have confidence that the last draft will again incorporate what we've just recently sent to them, and that those standards will help kids achieve at higher levels in the areas of English language arts.
Thank you, Ms. Tierney. I did jump over Representative Slawick. I think you had a
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think your last point right there just made that, is that we still have a huge achievement gap in Minnesota. Getting worse, race to the top application was highlighted as a problematic. Will the standards help close the achievement gap? Is that, and is, in your opinion?
Ms. Tierney.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the standards are for all students. I don't think that they will impact the achievement gap. I think what will impact the achievement gap is the implementation of those standards. I don't think the standards, because they are written for all students, will fix that problem.
Mr. Chair, so we still have to work on the, it's very segmented, and we know where the achievement gap is, and to get to those kids and help them achieve. But the idea is that it built each year. Hopefully kids wouldn't be passing on without knowing their each year. They would not go to the next year without knowing their base knowledge. And it should, you know, the whole thing about reading by third grade, you either are going to make it or you're not. And so the real interest in making sure that happens and that standards could reflect that. But it looks like there's still going to be targeted interventions.
Ms. Tierney, kind of related to that, so I'm recalling back Dr. Adi's, laying out some of the criteria, initial criteria here, and of course one was a criteria, I think the way you said it was, be realistic for the classroom. And Ms. Turner, you did say that at least the expectation here is not that how, you know, the pedagogy be dictated by the standards. However, we still have this realistic for the classroom, you know, expectation. And in particular, I'm wondering about ELL students and students with disabilities. I understand that the standards are meant to apply to everyone, and then ultimately deliver. It's how you deliver them. But it seems to me that what I'm hearing is that the national group is also mindful of this issue about what actually happens in the classroom relative to these standards. And, so I'm wondering if you can, any of you can comment. And Ms. Ross, I saw you kind of starting to lean forward, and maybe that's your opportunity to to jump in here as well.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. We were talking about who should answer this question.
I'm just trying to read the body language. You know? Not doing a good job.
All through this process that Dr. Oney and Ms. Tierney have laid out for you, we have been very inclusive at the department about incorporating the input from our special education and our ELL colleagues and the perspectives of the educators that we bring to the table to meet the needs of ELL students and special ed students in our Minnesota schools. Mm-hmm. And Common Core has been very receptive to that. They have specific language in the introduction of Common Core of how they have approached making these standards accessible, in particular to those two populations of students. And we have seen a lot of movement in terms of writing the standards to be more accommodating to students from variable backgrounds and variable abilities, to be less restrictive and more inclusive about how they demonstrate proficiency on those standards.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, if I could add,
Dr. Oney.
For mathematics, that has been a big concern. I think the way Carrie Ross stated it for reading, that's exactly how we feel for English language arts. However, for math, the same is not true. Given the lack of coherence that we see running throughout the K-12 math standards, this becomes especially problematic for teachers of students with special needs and for ELL students as they try to plan a coherent curriculum. This is a difficult task given the best kinds of curricula and the most clearly written standards, but when the standards are not coherently presented with very clear, well-developed learning progressions K through 12, this becomes, I think, even more problematic for those kinds of students. But I'm stealing thunder away from
Well, I was about to say that's probably a good segue.
Yep.
And so why don't we ask Dr. Gray and is it Ms. Delaney? Ellen?
Ellen Delaney.
Very well.
Sorry.
Yeah. So if you can please come forward and identify yourself for the record and engage with us with your testimony. It's good to see you again, Dr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, it's good to see you again. And also very pleased to have my own representative here, with Mindy Greiling. Thanks for having us here. My name is Larry Gray. I'm a professor of mathematics at the University of Minnesota. This is my longtime collaborator, Ellen Delaney. We've worked for a long time on Minnesota standards since the 2003, but more recently on the 2007 math standards.
It's good to see you again also, Ms. Delaney.
Thank you.
I wish we could be as positive about the mathematics side of this as we've heard for the English and language arts. In terms of content, that is, you know, just the mathematical topics that are there, the differences aren't so concerning between the two, and it's something we could, I think we could work with. But as Beth Oney told you, it's the implementation, it's the presentation, it's the coherence, the consistency, really the usability of this document that concerns us a lot. And I personally have invested a lot into this project. I have a belief that this would be a great thing if it's implemented properly. And so I've traveled three times to Washington, D.C. I organized a panel discussion in San Francisco devoted just to the standards and have have written a lot at their request and spent many hours telephone talking to the people who wrote these, trying to help it work out. But what I'm going to do today is give some examples of what I see as sort of symptoms of problems that exist in the way this is presented, the way the mathematics standards are presented in the Common Core. Ellen is going to then talk about what we see as the impact that this would have on teachers in Minnesota. So I'm going to get right down to it. So I'm aware that this is a draft, but it's the last draft before the final version. And there's about 6 weeks before the final version is going to come out. And you might think, okay, you can do a lot in 6 weeks, and that's true. But that requires a very disciplined and well-planned process if you're going to do this in one more step to produce a quality document. And what I'm going to show you today are some examples that just indicate that process is not in place, and I see no indication that it's going to be in place over the next 6 weeks to produce that kind of quality that we need. So I apologize, but we're going to look at a little mathematics. Okay?
Oh, boy. Instead of growling, you know how good my math is. So. Well, why don't you take over the committee while I step out for a few minutes.
You can look at the screen. And so those are two standards up there. Compare and put in order numbers between 1 and 10, presented in written symbols. And then it shows the symbols, 1 through 10. And the other one is put in order numbers presented in base 10 notation from 1 to 20 inclusive, and be able to explain the reasoning. Now you can see they're talking about the same skill, being able to put numbers, small numbers, in order. The details differ, and so you might think, well, those must be from two different sets of standards, or at least from two different grade levels. No, these are actually both from the Kindergarten Core Common Core standards. They appear on the same page, about 5 or 6 lines apart from each other. So how could that happen? They duplicate each other in some ways. They contradict each other in other ways in terms of what the level of expectation is. I can tell you, I'm not going to say the Minnesota math standards are perfect. They're very good, but they're not perfect. But there is no way that the process that we had in place would have, at any stage, have allowed something like this to stand, and certainly not by the time we got to the public release. This kind of duplication and difference in expectations. Which is it, 1 through 20 or 1 through 10? You know, that matters in the end. Have I just picked out, you know, just one example that's really bad? No. This is symptomatic of the entire document. Again, in fifth grade, I didn't pick out the worst example. There's one place where there are 5 different standards, all of which basically cover what we cover in a standard that takes one sentence in Minnesota. This is just a matter of quality control, and the process that's in place right now for writing these standards doesn't take care of this. So now we'll move on to another example, unless there are any questions on that one. I'll give you a quiz afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I'll step out. Yeah.
So if we could, let's see. Oh, I actually have to do it. Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay, so this one's, this is a higher grade level. Understand that algorithms are predefined steps that give the correct result in every case, while strategies are purposeful manipulations that may be chosen for specific problems, may not have a fixed order, and may be aimed at converting one problem into another. So this is an expectation of students. What grade level do you think this is? You don't have to raise your hand, but this is a second grade standard in the Common Core.
I would have said 10.
I said 7.
A second grade standard. Now again, I think in our process, there is no way this would have gotten past our elementary school teachers, who we would sit down with face to face and read through line by line with them and ask them whether it makes sense. These are 7-year-olds that are supposed to understand this distinction here. Not just the brightest 7-year-olds, all 7-year-olds. Now, again, have I picked out a really bad example? No. In fact, let me read from a report on these standards, a statement, in fact, let's see, I've sort of gotten off my script, so it said, this is what it says about the Grade 1 Common Core standard. It says, they are closely aligned with Grade 1 standards of high-achieving countries in many ways, but they use language more characteristic of a third-year university course in modern algebra. That's the Grade 1 standards in the Common Core. And this this exists throughout. I could give you, you know, I could give you so many examples.
I'm going to interrupt. Representative Norton has a question.
Well, thank you. And you somewhat addressed the initial thought I had, which was because we look at the TIMSS results and we compare ourselves to other countries, it begged my initial question was, are we begging the question that perhaps we're not teaching rigorous enough curriculum and that's the issue rather than the other? But then the second part, you've sort of touched on that, so maybe I'll just let you, you know, is it that that other countries are teaching a more rigorous curriculum and that the reaction of our teachers is because they're not teaching a rigorous enough curriculum now? That was the first part. I guess the second one, I'll just ask it now, has to do with your comment about the language, the level of the language. Isn't a standard really for the teacher and not for the student? I mean, the student won't read this.
Right.
A standard is something that the teacher reads and then incorporates it into the curriculum. So I guess I would ask that question.
Fair
as well.
Question.
Yeah. No, it's a fair question. The question is, when the teacher reads this, or a textbook writer, or an assessment, a test assessment writer, reads this, what exactly is the expectation for the seventh grader in this case? This distinction between algorithms and strategies, for example, okay, I don't want to get too much into the detail, but that distinction is not a part of any rigorous math in second grade. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In any country or just in ours? I think you were kind of getting to that. In any country?
In any country.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Certainly, I'm going to argue that we would want to be at the same level as high-achieving countries, and I think that the Minnesota standards are. And I don't think we differ, actually, when you get down to actual sort of math skills, that there's a big difference between us and the Common Core. But it's filled with this kind of language as well that is very problematic for everyone who's trying to figure out what exactly how is that going to be implemented in the classroom.
Please continue.
Okay, so I'd like to go on to another example of a standard. So this is a short one. Solve linear inequalities using properties of inequalities. Graph the solutions on a number line. Now, that comes from the Minnesota State Standards, 8th grade. One of, you know, many, many algebra standards that we have. We are very ambitious in Minnesota to have put 8th grade into, or algebra into 8th grade, and this has served as a model for many other places to see that this can actually be done. The reason I mention this one is that this standard was chosen for two reasons. It fits in well with the rest of the standards in algebra standards in Minnesota, and it prepares for a standard that's going to come later in high school, an algebra standard that's going to come in later in high school that's more demanding, having to do with linear inequalities. There's nothing like this in the 8th grade Common Core standards. So their high school expectations are the same as ours in, with regarding to this particular topic. But the preparation that we feel is necessary in the previous grade is missing. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to get into all the details of, you know, exactly what is the mathematics involved. But in general, a decision was made in the Common Core writing to avoid preparation for algebra. Whereas when we wrote the 2007 standards, and we realized that we were being very ambitious to put algebra into 8th grade, we began to think, what are the steps that are going to be required in 7th grade, in 6th grade, in 5th grade, all the way down to kindergarten, that will make this actually feasible? And so, for example, there's an important concept in algebra the mathematical concept of a function. We have, starting in kindergarten, age-appropriate standards or benchmarks that are directed towards having students develop some understanding so that by the time they get to eighth grade and are introduced to the formal definition of a function, they will have had lots of experience and lots of development that helps them be ready for that. There's nothing like that in the Common Core standards. And this is something that we pointed out, and a decision was made to leave that out. In fact, there are no algebra thinking strands prior to eighth grade. I think it's eighth grade or seventh grade, but prior to eighth grade, I think, in the Common Core standards. So this is, in some sense, they kind of copied Minnesota in what they put into, in a lot of what they put into eighth grade, but they didn't copy us in how we implemented this. And for our teachers, this makes all the difference, the fact that we have this, all this material leading up to the algebra in eighth grade and then in ninth grade.
Dr. Gray, you've generated a number of questions, and I want to make sure that we get to Ms. Delaney, because I do want to hear this issue of impacting on schools and teachers, and I do want to try to squeeze you in as well, Ms. Kelleher. So Representative Greiling, Representative Brainerd, and Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to talk a very long time, and I don't really have a question as much as a very big sound of alarm. For legislators who weren't here in the days when we did our Minnesota standards and maybe aren't as familiar with the two testifiers that we have up here, or actually all three, but Ms. Delaney also used to be sort of my constituent because she was the Teacher of the Year in the when she was in the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale schools. It used to be part of my district before redistricting, and not before she went to Spring Lake Park. And then Dr. Gray, the head of the math department at the University of Minnesota, these two have, all the credibility in the world with all the legislators that went through that project, and they have given of their time and been volunteers and spent more hours than probably most staff people, if not all, who were being paid specifically to do this job, to get the Minnesota standards that we have. And they were done in such a rapid fashion just to meet some timelines as well, but still managed to avoid this kind of situation that we have with what they're telling us. But they are a can-do, positive people, and not the sort to just poo-poo and roadblock haphazardly or casually. So I'm now very alarmed. I was already alarmed about having standards when we worked so hard to have good ones and high ones in Minnesota, just that we are going to be part of a consortium and then rubber stamp whatever is done there, and also with the speed of which this thing is trying to come through. But now I'm exceedingly alarmed because nobody could make me be that alarmed as these two talking about math. And they have modestly not said that our state students started doing much better on math tests already, just with the work that we've had that they have done, and it hasn't even been around that long. And so I have to say, I never was of a mind, but now I'm really not of a mind to adopt these standards so fast.
Representative Greiling, I concur with both your sharing with members here of the involvement of these two fine gentle people. Ooh, I almost blew that one. And we are all well advised by both Ellen and Larry. Ms. Holland, just a very quick question for you relative to this issue. I think earlier, at the very beginning, you said that the governor will make a decision. So there's several decisions, either not to adopt the two content area standard, or adopt one and not adopt the other. Did I hear that right, that a state can opt into one and not actually – even the question the state can is kind of interesting to me. But I guess relative to Race to the Top, what if we adopt one and not the other? What happens?
Mr. Chair, if we adopt one subject but not the other, we won't get full points scored on our application.
Okay, so we lose out on points. Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Gray, I'm stuck on this algebra issue here, and I'm wondering how can it be that this national consortium of experts who are dealing with aligning K-12 standards to college and career readiness, when college and career readiness is like the algebra is, you know, the landmark in math for college and career readiness, how is it that they can't be looking at these preparatory standards? And have you had any, beyond the specific standards discussion, have you had a discussion with their leadership about how they can let this go?
And I suspect there will be a polite answer on your reflection on your colleagues across the nation, Dr. Gray.
Yes, I have had such discussions, and the department has had extensive discussions about this. We just even 2 weeks ago had an hour and a half phone call, and one of the main points we made, in fact, the first point we made was this lack of preparation for algebra. One way this happened, I'm speculating a little bit, but I think I have a pretty good touch with what happened. When people think about putting algebraic thinking into K through 7, they get the wrong idea. They think, oh, we're putting all this algebra down there. We're just going way too far. That's not the way we thought of it at all. We were saying, okay, what kinds of development will help once they get to 8th grade? It's not that we were dumping the algebra into the earlier grades. But that fear played a big role. Mm-hmm. I know the people. I've worked with them a lot. They've had a lot of constituencies that they've had to try to appease in all of this. And one constituency expressed this fear. Oh, we don't want to go too far. In fact, many of them were afraid of having the algebra in 8th grade as well. And that shifted back and forth from one draft to the next.
I'm going to do this. We have two questions, but I'm going to ask Ms. Delaney to go forward. And thank you. I saw you're very graciously pointing over to your colleague because I do want to hear your perspectives on this as well. And then we'll jump to Representative Peterson and Representative Norton. Ms. Delaney.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to start by saying there are some really good things about this. And so we need to hear those. The first thing is that this document, their very first draft I saw, you probably won't understand this, but it made my heart flutter because I thought, finally, somebody gets that we have to separate concepts from skills. And just looking at this audience, most of you probably learn mathematics by having a teacher present some problems to you. Then you did some, and then they presented some again, and you might have done some with some friends. And then you went home and you did about 30 more. And then you came back and you said, okay, I didn't get a lot of these. And so the teacher repaired and then presented a new way of doing some problems, and then you did some, and you did that day after day after day. And you learned how to memorize things really, really well and kept them for as long as you could until the test. And then the next day, it was all gone unless...
You read my biography, huh?
And this is why when we even say the word math, you get that little sweat bead. Okay. Well, what this document did is separate this idea of these are the conceptual understandings that we need to build in kids so that all of those procedures begin to make some sense. Because there are very few people, most of them are math teachers, who can remember all of that stuff. And what we found in Minnesota is even our math teachers are missing some of those conceptual understandings because they never learned them. So when we ask them to teach kids, trying to duplicate without really good professional development the way they learned it, and it doesn't work for most of us. So what the original draft had was a set of understandings that kids needed to have so that these skills would make sense to them. We raved about that. I raved about that personally at every single meeting. And in the final draft that we're looking at, they have blended them.
I'm sorry, and they have what?
Blended them.
Oh, blended.
And the problem with blending them is that now audience becomes very confusing. So I really think that for standards, you should be able to put them in front of the kids, and the kids should understand what they're expected to know and be able to do. But the one that Larry shared, understand that algorithms, can you put, is that one, can sure. we put that one back up? Yeah. There, you could not put that in front of a second grader, because this is not a standard for the kid. This is a standard for the teacher. And the cool thing about the original was I knew everything on the left was the stuff I was supposed to teach them so they would understand everything on the right. When they did this, it became a mess. Mm. So now teachers will have to take that back apart so they know what the kids need to understand so this stuff makes sense. So I'm disappointed because the thing that we said over and over and over again was, cool, keep them separate. Part of the problem was is that they didn't always have what do kids need to understand to learn this concept. Sometimes they just had naked math over here. And sometimes they had concepts over here that they didn't follow through and actually teach the kids the math. So we continually, every meeting, while they were separate, said, line them up, make sure that people understand why they're learning these procedures. And it's my belief that they couldn't do it or chose not to value that. And so by blending them, we couldn't tell anymore that they weren't matched up. And it's created a bigger mess, in my feeling, for implementation than it needed to be. It would be better to have them separate and not matched up than to have them combined, because now you can't tell who the audience is. Another cool thing that they have is that they have some language in here about math practices. One of the things that kids should do in terms of the way they work, there are some really neat statements. I really believe that these are some of the best minds in the country, because what they're talking about is really, really good stuff, but they don't know a hill of beans about standards. They don't get them. For example, at our first meeting, we had a draft, and the question came up, how do you define a standard? They hadn't done that yet.
Why was that important?
They didn't even know why that was important. Well, it's important because if you have writers from all over the country writing and sending something to one main mathematician, which is what the guy is, right? Mm-hmm. A mathematician, you better have a common understanding of what you're writing. And it is my belief, if you had an inkling of the math, you would read this and know that they had never defined it. Because some of the standards they wrote can be taught in a day. And some of the standards they wrote can be taught in a month. And that kind of lack of clarity around what a standard is will create significant confusion in classrooms. Because our teachers are accustomed to the same, what we call grain size. That if you see a standard, it's going to take about 2 weeks. It's going to take about a month. And you'll see a consistency throughout a document. Here, there's no such consistency. The other big push that, you know, if you had asked me in 2003, I could never have said this legitimately. Because I was really against kind of standards, and the reason I got involved is I wanted to be sure they were good. If we had to have them, I want them to be good. So the idea of having national standards, I think in 2003 I would have found it abhorrent. But I'm of a different mind today, and I'll tell you why. Textbooks. If you have kids, and if you've watched kids or grandkids over time, you will notice that our mathematics textbooks cannot be carried by little ones. Because they are physically too large. What seems to have happened is that everybody in the nation has adopted standards. The textbook companies have to prove to every state that their stuff is in there, and by God, it is. Every state. So we have math books that are now an inch and a half thick that were given to fourth, fifth, sixth graders to carry around all day. It is not surprising that some of our students have gone to backpacks on wheels because they can't lift them. And more than any, I've done a lot of curriculum work with a lot of disciplines, more than any other discipline, mathematics teachers are textbook dependent, more than any other discipline. So that textbook is the crux of what needs to happen. What really good national standards will do is reduce the size of our textbooks. It'll have the right stuff so that kids will learn mathematics. And truly, mathematics here, mathematics in Alabama, mathematics in Singapore, mathematics in Japan is mathematics. And when I grew up, we called it the universal language. The cool thing before all the story problems was that you could get a kid who couldn't speak English and they could do math. Mm-hmm. I was a teacher with kids who couldn't speak English, but they were successful in mathematics when we were back doing naked numbers because they didn't need the language. Math is math. I mean, it's good stuff. Now, I love that we've moved on and are actually applying it and using it somewhere, so that's good too. So that doesn't work as well as it used to, but I really think fundamentally the original message that we sent, and we've sent it repeatedly, was they needed a better framework. And my fear is that they are trying to bandage this and fix it, and it's fundamentally flawed. Because they don't know what a standard is. They don't have any sense of mastery. Your kindergarten example is perfect for that. You've got, in the same grade level, on the same page, kids counting and ordering to 10, kids counting and ordering to 20. You're the kindergarten teacher. You don't have a math major. This is what they will do, because I have had the questions. All right, now there's got to be a difference between these two. I have to figure out what the difference is. I don't think I know enough math to know the, you know, wanna show them what I'm talking about. Can you imagine this poor kindergarten teacher trying to figure out what the difference is between these two when they're the same thing, except one goes to 10 and one goes to 20? They're literally the same. It's just written differently. There's no deep meaning here, and they're going to try to find deep meaning. And there are pieces like that all the way through the document. In our K-5 folks, particularly, are the ones that I worry about the most, because they don't have a deep understanding of math. I look at this and say, well, wasn't that stupid? They won't look at this and say that. They will say, does base 10 have something to do with the going to 20? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, it will really significantly change. And these aren't little things. They're all the way through the document. It's not like we could go in and just pick one up and throw it away. We tried to show a path so we could explain what we were talking about with this algebra thing, with trying to build skills so that they were really ready for 8th grade algebra, because it's all missing, K-7. So we mapped ours, and it took us, you know, well, the biggest problem was that the technology was challenging.
Excel.
And we did cut and paste to show them, you know. So it was a cut and paste task. And we went through and said, okay, find 2.1, now find 3.1, now find 4.1. And we literally went cut and paste, and that's as easy as it was. He and I, and we have a lot of math in our background, he much more than me, couldn't do the progressions. We couldn't easily, in this document, say, let's just map. So then we tried to do it with other topics, because maybe algebra is not there. And we found one that we could do, and it's because they starred them for us. So they made it easy. So we pulled that out and said, okay, this is what we're doing. So the document itself is somewhat chaotic. And in truth, you want some redundancy. You want repetition sometimes if it's a key thing. But what you would do in a standards document is you would build. You'd say, this is what I want at first grade, and I'm going to build that, write it a little stronger, maybe go a little further for second grade. I want that redundancy because I want kids to build that skill over time.
Mr. Lydia, we're running out of time, so I know it.
Can I just finish this last statement?
Please, yeah.
There are bad redundancies in the document, and there are huge gaps in the document when we compare them to what we would want in terms of getting kids to the algebra in eighth grade. I don't think it's going to happen with this document, though there's a lot of promise there, isn't there? I mean, textbook, good textbooks. I just want to end on a
so
good note.
Close, it's so close, it's so far away. And folks, you heard it here. Math is good stuff. I've got you quoted. Members, for those who want to hang around, the chair's willing to hang around because there's several members who still have some questions and comments. I really would like to hear from Ms. Kelleher. And so maybe why don't we ask Ms. Kelleher to come down? She was here probably before the chair was this morning. And so I want to honor her presence here. And then depending on how long you folks want to hang around, then we have some questions for Representative Downing, Peterson-Slawick. Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And it's really tough to follow up the people. It's just amazing about math and math textbooks and how we see that in our everyday and where our future lies. And it really brings us to a critical juncture. And we have spent time at the association reading a blueprint for reform. This is what comes out of the President's Office and Department of Education on sort of where they see things going down the road. Members, a lot of it is race to the top. You can call it another form, another program, but there's an awful lot of money tied to those standards. To that end, school boards around the state who weren't necessarily successful on the race to the top application started to get together and talk. And we're presently up to 18 states we're working with, all who have members that serve on education committees in either the House or the Senate. And they're really, Congress seems to have gotten into the feeling that the first time through with the stimulus money, they let their congressional reins go a little wide afield. And they need to be much more careful and thoughtful as this reauthorization goes through and these principles need to be examined. So part of the consortium will be coming up with statements of things that are good or bad. For Minnesota, if you look at the turnaround models, I was here a year ago talking about our concerns with the turnaround models and our problems with having rural districts in the state where you can't just close the school. So we're going to be asking Congress to help us on those and as they enact it toward the president. It's a sort of new way to go, but certainly with change at this speed, we need to reach out to those who are in Washington to be our partners going forward. One size doesn't fit all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Delaney and Dr. Gray. As a layperson, that was extremely helpful to understand kind of how all of that fits together. And I think my question is for you two, or one of you two, do our current Minnesota standards have the concept and the specific skills differentiation? Are we that much farther ahead in the overall construct of our standards compared to what you're seeing coming from the common standards?
We don't have that kind of differentiation where they were separated that much. We did include a lot of understanding kinds of things, a lot of places where students were supposed to be able to explain, you know, what their thinking was and so on, which is what characterizes these sort of concept sides when they're well done. When they're not well done, it's this university level language that they've got. But we have a lot of that, but we didn't have the separate column. And that was something that one of the innovations, they had a few innovations that actually pretty good. And there are a few other things that are pretty good. But they're not ready for prime time.
Representative Norton.
Well, I appreciate the pluses and deltas that were shared. I think that's important that we hear that. And I certainly know as a student, I could learn the facts, but I needed the background, the policy, the concept for me to learn, and that's always seemed to be missing for me. So I really appreciate those comments. One of the things I thought I heard early from, is it Dr. Ani, about that we could adopt more stringent, we could have our own standards that could be more stringent than the standards. And so I guess my question would be, if that's the case, and we like our own better, but they're within the national, these core standards, could the state go ahead and adopt the core standards, keeping ours in place, be able to circumvent the need to have both of them to qualify for race to the top, because ours are better. So if ours are embedded in theirs or vice versa, could we adopt theirs but keep ours in place down at the grassroots level until we could, and then pick and choose what we like?
That's a great question. I had the same thought when I was wrestling with the 15, well, with the 15%. You know, so what if we really want 25%? Are we negated from that? Or so, Dr. Ani?
Mr. Chair, Representative, our understanding of the rules doesn't allow us to do that.
Oh. Representative Gravely, did you hear that answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Dr. Ephraim, I had forgotten you had also asked to testify.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch. I won't go through all of my testimony, but I just want to say that EdWatch has huge concerns not only about the quality and the details of the standards, both math and language arts, but the fact of whether we should be doing this at all from a constitutionality, a state sovereignty, a parental rights, a cost, all of those types of issues. We have enormous concerns about this. The last 45 years of selling our educational, constitutional, and legislative souls for a mess of pottage hasn't really worked out for Minnesota. If you think about the billions of dollars on the state level and the trillions of dollars nationally that we have done with doing federal control since 1965 and standards, and we haven't improved the achievement gap. Even the commissioner said so yesterday. Our NAEP scores are flat. Our ranking in internationally hasn't really improved since we've been doing all this. And we do not think that adopting national standards is going to help. The U.S. Department of Education, the National Governors Association, the Council of Chief State School Officers have all said that these Common Core standards need to be adopted verbatim and that there is no alternative to the Common Core standards for qualification for Race to the Top. You're only holding one hearing. This is a huge issue. We have been told, and the chairman has mentioned to me that the department has expedited rulemaking authority and can adopt this without legislative approval or even public hearings. That doesn't seem like a very good way to go, especially after all of the trial and tribulation that this state has been through with the profile of learning. Specifically about the standards themselves, there are many problems related to quality. There's been much criticism on the qualifications of the writing team, lack of transparency, conflicts of interest. With regard to the math portion, in addition to what you have heard, Dr. James Milgram of Stanford University, who is on the validation team that is going to be doing final approval, said, quote, "The leisurely development of basic arithmetic skills and failure to prepare students for an authentic Algebra 1 course in grade 8 mean that Common Core's mathematics standards are at a significantly lower level than those in California, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Indiana in the highest achieving countries. Our basic concern is whether final decisions not to align with the most demanding mathematics standards in this country and elsewhere have already been made." That is a huge indictment of these standards. There are similar comments by other math experts, and EdWatch shares these concerns. We're heartened that Governor Pawlenty and the department seem to be very hesitant about adopting the math standards, and I hope that that will continue. Regarding the English standards, there's a lot of criticism. High school teacher, college professor, and author of many books on grammar, Edward Schuster, said that the writing standards will, quote, "kill the spirit that produces great literature and nonfiction," end quote. Sandra Stotsky, a member of the Massachusetts School Board and member of the validations committee for these standards, who reviewed Minnesota's language arts standards when they were developed after the profile, had much to criticize. She said, quote, considerable progress has been made in addressing the deficiencies in the January draft of Common Core's grade level standards for reading and English language arts, but much more work remains to make ELA standards as good as, if not better than, those in the top rated states in the country, California, Indiana, Massachusetts, and Texas. The most serious problem with Common Core's ELA standards remain its organizational scheme. A set of generic, content-free, and culture-free skills do not serve as the basis for generating grade-level academic standards, especially at the high school level, and as the basis for reliable and valid common assessments. So the picture is not near as rosy as we're being told.
Thank
here.
You, Dr. Ephraim.
And we really share these concerns. We oppose the standards, and we also oppose Race to the Top and support Representative Pawlowski and Senator Hand's bill to pull
Thank
us
you. I greatly appreciate it. I apologize. It's just that we're headed for session, and members are starting to sneak out here very quickly. I apologize to the members I didn't call. We still had a couple. I do want to thank all our testifiers today. I mean, this really was more like a four-hour hearing for us to really have a much more meaningful conversation. It is my intent within the ability of the workings of the session to continue to have these kind of discussions. Representative Newton, I think your point earlier expressing grave concern about the timeline relative to the presence of the legislature being in session is one that I think is commonly shared here. And so at this point, the best the chair can do at this point, you know, is to continue to have public hearings so that we can continue to have transparency around this issue, but we'll continue to explore ways in which to work in tandem with the executive branch on this issue as it goes forward. So with that, members, we may still have, I know we're going to have at least one more informational hearing and possibly a couple more, but I will let you all know as soon as possible. Thank you to all for being here. And again, to our testifiers, this committee stands adjourned.